The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi guys, Islander 5 is out to purchase now. As you can see from this amazing cover, this edition's theme is heroism, power, and modernity. And the articles in there, which I have to say are rather good, don't you know, and I'm not just talking about mine, I'm talking about all of them, they discuss what the heroic society is and why modernity is destroying it, but why the spirit of the hero is looming throughout everything that's happening. And again, I say the cover goes hard, right? Because, I mean, look at it. Just you would think that this was tailored for the current events, but no, we're always ahead of the curve. Anyway, it's thicker than normal as well because we just happen to have a load of extra content in there. We've got an exclusive interview from Rupert Lowe, letters from the editor, and a comic that's halfway through that's philosophically informed, which I think you'll enjoy. So get it while you can at shop.lotuses.com. The link will be in the description. Hi, folks. Welcome back to another one of Carl and Dan's Political Chats. A lot's going on at the moment, and it's really fast, and we've got a lot to cover, so let's just crack on. Polling has been very strange, right? So here's a YouGov poll from today from Sky News, as reported by Sky News. YouGov being, I think, the fourth most reliable pollster in the country out of something like 50, so they're pretty good. They get most things correct. Reform on 25, Labour on 21, Conservatives on 17, Greens on 16, and no one cares about the Liberal Democrats. So that's a low poll. This is sort of a high poll. We get Reform on 32, Conservatives on 18, Greens on 17, Labour on 14, Lib Dems on 11. Right. So let's have a look at the average of polls. Right. So there has been a bit of a downturn recently for Reform, but they got a 1% bump from the Tory defections.
Interesting.
1%.
The thing that strikes me about this is your first poll. Okay, let's contrast your first poll with your second poll. The second poll, where it was actually quite a strong difference,
yeah,
is something that we talked about a whole bunch of times, and that is Reformer in first place and everybody else is in second place. And that is inherently unstable because in a two-party system, first past the post is designed to be a two-party system. You can't have four parties in second place. It doesn't hold.
Yeah.
But what your first poll shows is you've actually got five parties in second place.
There's no clear leader.
Now, that is wildly unstable for a political system.
It's crazy. But like we were talking about previously, what I think we're witnessing is a current realignment, right? Mm. The centre is draining out into the fringes, frankly, the extremes. And this is just the process that we are watching play out. And so you can see where all these things, and we'll come to where these things, who these people are and where they're going in a minute, in fact. But so this gives us some general election predictions, right? This is from Electoral Calculus. And as you can see, if based on the previous seats, the next one, the prediction for the next one is like roughly what they think they're going to get. So depending on like the average of polls gives you this, could be a lot higher, could be a lot lower. But either way, it's pretty bad for the Conservatives and Labour, right? So if the Conservatives and Labour really hit it out of the park, they get not even 250 seats each. Considering Keir Starmer's got 407
at the moment. And I mean, the Conservatives are on like 120, but you know, they should be the major party.
Yes.
But the low seats,
the high seats don't add up. So this is just to be each row is to be considered discrete.
Correct. But the low seats, I mean, my God, that's pretty bad.
Yes.
For Reform, the lowest they think they're going to get is 135. Now, that's not great, but considering they've got eight MPs at the moment, there's still a lot of ground gained, the average being 274, but of course, the high, 396. So if you're Nigel Farage and you're looking at this, you can think, well, a bit of solid campaigning, right, with my 28% average.
I think that is really the danger. And I think this is what not just Nigel Farage, but the entire political class is doing. And everybody in SW1. So I'm including all the mainstream media.
The entire Westminster bubble.
Yeah, everything. The entire Westminster bubble. What I think they're doing is they think that they are playing pre-Brexit political chess. And the reason they think that is because they literally don't know anything else. Their entire careers, their entire lives have been pre-Brexit political chess.
And not only their entire lives, the lives of their grandparents.
Oh, yeah, going back to whatever it is, like 1930
or whatever it is.
Whenever it was that the Labour Party emerged,
literally all modern political calculation.
Yes.
Has ended.
Yes, and all living memory is this political chess move where you do this, I do that, and then one of us gets checkmate, and then we win the election, or we form a working party with a hung parliament or whatever it is. Right, I'm not sure that's what's actually going on. What I think has happened is that the political legitimacy itself is drinking at the last chance saloon.
Yes,
and that what you're actually seeing is we're in a shake up where legitimacy is preceding parties and not the other way around. Because what I think the average commentator, well, the SW1 bubble thinks, is that what is going on is a process of elite realignment. And then once the elites have worked out what that realignment is, legitimacy follows from that, normal governance resumes. And that's probably why you see this sort of tacit approval for Reform, even amongst things like the BBC, who are giving him the time of day and stuff like that. What I actually think is happening is that Reform are dancing on thin ice in between the rotten political establishment and something which is not allowed to exist yet. And that is made up of excluded parties, right? And I've not been thinking about this long, but the three excluded parties I would highlight on this is one excluded talent. Rupert Lowe is an example of this. Now, what I mean by excluded, so for example, I don't think that, and I think even Rupert himself would agree with me if he heard this, I don't think that Rupert Lowe is a once in a generation political talent. I think that he is a once in a decade leakage from the excluded part of the political world to the included part. He wasn't supposed to make that transition. You're normally excluded. Nigel Farage himself is probably the last decade's leakage from the excluded world into the included world. These people don't get across normally. I think actually there are dozens, if not hundreds, of Rupert Lowe's out there ready to act who could, if it were not the fact they're excluded. And they're excluded for a number of reasons. They're excluded because the political system, one, doesn't want them in, and two, the political system is so rotten they don't want to go in either. So there's a kind of double exclusion mechanism going on there. The second excluded field is, where do the narratives that resonate come from? And I think they come from us.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes literally you and I, people in this office, or the online right sphere as a whole.
Very much so.
And we know this is true because the amount of times where we've done some serious thinking on something and compressed it into a narrative or phrasing that then resonates and people understand. And then we're watching a Nigel Farage press conference 2 months later and we see a very specific bit of phrasing that we've used.
Two-tier policing.
Exactly.
That was a very online right thing.
Yes.
Remigration is another example of this. And there are Max Tempers in particular. Has been very effective. He's only got like 20,000 Twitter followers, but Max Tempers isms end up percolating upwards into the mainstream bubble.
And I understand why this is happening. This is happening because even though we are persona non grata for Nigel Farage and the SW1 bubble, the people working for them, they're all watching us.
Yes.
Right. So when they see something, they're then like, oh, okay, I'll jot that down and I'll go to the boss and I say, you could phrase it like this. And he's like, bloody hell, that's good.
You came up with that all yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I did, sir.
But, I mean, I don't mind if they steal it. They're welcome to.
No, but not... I mean, we put it out in the public for free, right? But not only that, it's not even that they necessarily are watching us, although I think a lot of them are.
They are, because they message us sometimes.
Cool, I know which ones are. But the milieu ends up being curated in the direction that we want it to go, because we create the memes, or like we compress the ideas down, and this just flows through into the river.
Well, right? We're the only ones actually doing thinking as opposed to responding to headlines.
Yes.
Which is what they spend most of their time doing.
I like your point about this is not about elite realignment, and I think you're right. Mm. I think what this is about is the public realignment, because...
That is my third point, yeah.
We'll come to that a bit later on in the podcast, if that's right. Because we are in a democratic system. For all of its faults, we still have the power of selection. Right? It is actually up to the public to decide what MPs they return to the parliament.
Okay, so I'll return to my third excluded group, because that will almost certainly flow
in. It's the general public.
it's the voters who showed up for Brexit.
Yes.
Never had before, never had since.
Put a pin in it. We'll come back to it, because you're exactly on the money, I think, there. But you are right. And this is why Farage taking all the ex-Tories is so weird. And everyone's like, what are you doing? Well, that works by the logic of the 20th century.
If you play political chess, it works.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't I just take these known, and a lot of them are MPs, known or have been MPs, have been in government. Well, yeah, if I just bring them over, legitimacy flows from the top. Legitimacy flows from the party. Nigel Farage thinks he is gaining legitimacy by doing this. However, having our ear to the ground, we're like, oh, people are not happy with this.
No.
There are a lot of people who hate Zia Youssef for being a Muslim. A lot of people. Now, I'm not saying I'm one of them or anything like that, but like, you can't deny that. And Lalia Cunningham has had this exact same point. Read the comments on her trigonometry interview. It's a good interview, right? She's a fluent, clear speaker, and she's obviously not a raging Islamist. And yet,
yes,
a large portion of the British public just hear the word Muslim and are just like, don't like it.
She's actually quite politically sound. I listened to that in the car on the way in the morning. She's pretty good. I mean, the issue is
that she was going to get a fair hearing.
Yeah, the issue is that there was acute demographic stress because of the decisions of the elite. And so, you know, people are kind of at the point where politics has been sectarianized. You know, it's like saying to, you know, a Protestant in Northern Ireland at the height of the Troubles, you know, this Catholic over here can articulate your views really well. Why didn't you vote for them? And it's like, well, because they're a Catholic.
And then you're exactly right. And so they are playing with the deck chairs on the Titanic. Rearranging them, thinking that this will give legitimacy as to the seating arrangement, but actually everyone's already getting on the lifeboats.
And I can understand why they think it works, is because it always has that worked that way before. People wait for the elites to come to a consensus between them. That then gets laundered through the media. Everybody at home gets told, okay, the elites have agreed, and therefore this is a good thing, this is what we're doing. And the public have been spent, it depends on how old you are. If you're 60, you've been watching the political class do that for 60 years and produce failure after failure. The political system as a whole is drinking in the last chance saloon here. It's not a question of whether the elites agree. They can do that. They don't have the underlying legitimacy. And what legitimacy that reform did have was we are not them.
Yes. We're a protest vote.
Yes. It's a weak form of legitimacy, but it's good enough in this moment.
And then anyone else has gone.
And they are stamping on the we're not them by hiring everybody who is them.
It's literally them.
Yes.
And there was another thing as well. What was I going to say? I had something there, but I lost it. Anyway,
we did that a bit.
I'm sure we'll come back to it. Right, so, this is not great, actually. Very mediocre Tory reform Tory bounce, I guess. And of course, with this kind of polling, not good. Like, it's a hung parliament any way you slice it, like we were talking about the other day. There isn't, not even really a hung parliament. You know, like, how are you, it would have to take like the Lib Dems or something to come over. You're basically...
Is the Black in the Middle or the Northern Ireland Party?
Oh, yeah, sorry, the Northern Ireland parties would have to decide it. Now, they'd definitely go for the Reform and Conservatives. Yeah. But still, like, that is...
Yes.
Like, this, as you were saying, this is indicative of a political system that has lost legitimacy, right? And the people who are actually being realigned are the voting public. They are realigning themselves in spite of what the elites are doing. Right. The voting public are not happy.
My entire argument can be boiled down to legitimacy is preceding the elites, not the other way around. And that's a shock for the system, and they don't know how to process it.
Correct. And it's creating a weird series of misalignments that I think that people aren't really thinking about. So, of course, we have the Tory defectors from to reform, which, as you can see, the five MPs. So now they have more Tory defectors MPs than they had reform MPs.
I mean, they did, well, yes, Lee Anderson. I mean, they did start off with five. And then
Lee Anderson at least won as a reform candidate. So yes. But they've got, the, you know, four Tory MP defectors now. And now that's pretty unprecedented as well when you think about it. Like, I can't really remember political defections before now, right? Like, political defections were really unusual. Like, Douglas Carswell was one.
Yeah, he went to UKIP and won Clacton. And there, I mean, there was there always is one per parliament. I remember the Labour government had somebody who defected, and
but they're really unusual.
Yeah, and I can't remember their names.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But now these are incredibly high profile.
Oh yeah, now it's the 6 o'clock news. You find out who the latest Tory to defect. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we get off this and discover there's been another one while we're in here filming.
Entirely possible. I mean, this literally happened the other day when we were filming with Jeremy.
Yeah. Oh yes, it did.
You know, we literally had to scrap an entire episode of this because we were like, well, I mean, is Jeremy going to? We don't know. And then suddenly it turns out he had. But the point is, the Tory party is clearly a bleeding, wounded, dying animal.
Yes.
And that's not good. That's not going anywhere, right? But what is...
Well, I mean, the Tories bleeding. I don't mind that bit. But yes, for the political system as a whole,
I'm all for it. And but this is the point, right? The reason they're bleeding is because nobody understands the ground shifting underneath their feet. Mm. And they're like, oh, right, well, we've got to move. I mean, this is clearly... Something's happening.
Yes.
But we don't know why we're doing what we're doing, right? We just know...
It's the Tyrannosaurus chasing after the Diplodocus, unaware that the meteor is streaking overhead.
Pretty much. I mean, the Conservatives are flailing, but they're like, well, you know, reform back in... And this was only 6 months ago or so. When was that? Yeah, July 2025. So like 8 months ago. You know, Farage was like, oh, I wouldn't take Suella Braverman because she'd damage the party's image. Well, what's happened? Again, are there any Tories you wouldn't take? Because you think you're gaining legitimacy that flows from the elite. That's why he's done. I mean, literally, it's a stated reason. I want people with experience in government so people can know we're a professionalised party and you can put your trust in us. It's like, well, actually, that's not where the trust is coming from. The trust was coming from the fact that you wouldn't take the Tories.
There's a deeper piece of thinking that I'm doing on my next Brokenomics, which is to just fundamentally reevaluate how does the British state actually work. And I've been getting into this, and I think it is not anything like the story we're told. The actual story is that it is a system of risk management.
Yes.
I mean, how do I avoid judicial risk? How do I avoid market risk? How do I avoid risk of incompatibility with international treaties, that kind of thing? And when you view it as a whole series of risk ownerships, changing the people doing the narrative construction element of this doesn't do a damn thing.
And that was what Dominic Cummings' point was. It's like the ministers... the
exactly what triggered my thinking, Dominic Cummings, yeah.
The offices are not beholden to the ministers. The ministers are just kind of figureheads, and they do nothing of any substance. But anyway, the question is this going to last? Because, I mean, like, obviously you've got Zia Youssef pointing out that, well, you know, we'll repeal the Online Safety Act that Braverman and Jemrick put across. I mean, Dorries was literally the author of it. She's currently in the party. And you know, he's been going at them again. This is back in July for months. Like this is not. And the thing is, this isn't ancient history. You know, 8 months ago is not that long ago, actually. Right. But things have changed so severely that now they have to go completely back the other way. And go, oh no, I've always liked Suella Braverman and Robert Jemrick.
Yeah.
Do we think this is a match made in heaven? Do we think this is an alliance that's going to
something
last?
Very interesting. Very interesting conversations are going to be had behind the scenes. Zia, if you want to get in touch and tell us what you really think, we will preserve your confidence. I'd just like to know what you make of this.
Absolutely. Especially as he's got a controlling stake in reform.
And, yes. Yes.
You know, and you don't pay 200 grand for that for nothing, right?
No, he's the heir apparent. He's the crown prince.
Of course. And but this, there are going to be personality conflicts, I think. In this, the election is still 3 years out, probably, unless it comes sooner, which no one can guarantee.
I mean, to be perfectly fair, if the party consisted of two MPs and one of them was Nigel Farage, there would be personality conflicts.
Yes,
and they're almost certainly going to be in a party of 10 now.
and being and with big names,
yes,
and big social media presences, and 3 years to get on each other's nerves. I mean, I don't know.
And you can treat Tyson Lee Anderson as your butler,
yeah,
but can you get away with treating Suella Braverman and Robert Jenrick that way? I don't think so.
The ambitious Jenrick. Yeah. Anyway, so Farage explains to us why he's taken these people and why he wouldn't take others, because that's the question, right? It's like, okay, well, if you take Suella Braverman, why wouldn't you take Liz Truss? If you take Nadine Dorries, why wouldn't you take Boris Johnson?
Yeah.
She's
well,
a,
yes.
What's the reason for excluding them? And this is what he says.
You talk about Britain being broken, but you're filling reform with the very people that broke it.
Well, the Conservative government did break it, absolutely. But you see, there are people like Robert Jenrick who resigned as a matter of principle. People like Suella Braverman who spoke out on ECHR, said we should leave, and was removed from her post. So we are taking people who tried their best to fight the system at the time, and they admit they failed.
So we're taking failures.
Well, another way of looking at that is we're only going to take people who've been given the Rupert Lowe treatment, except in the Tory party.
Yes. But like, the theme here is, yes, they did all this damage, but they are failures, so we're taking them. It's like, I mean, that's...
Hang on, what happened to Naheem... Oh, I can't do the name. Naheem Zahawi. What?
Nadeem Zahawi.
Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't get booted out, did he?
No, he stood down because he knew he was going to get canned.
Right, so Farage's own framing doesn't even apply to him?
No, it only applies to these two.
Right.
Because these are clearly incidents of convenience. Right.
Well, these are the two he's being asked about at the moment. If the interviewer was a bit sharper, she would have said, okay, well, how does Zahawi fit that pattern?
But that's the point, right? Because this isn't about him already having a sort of pre-established line. Because otherwise that pre-established line would have been what it was 8 months ago when Zia Youssef is like, we're not taking...
No, this is a political chess player noticing an unguarded pawn or bishop. He's just taking pieces.
Thinking that legitimacy flows from the top down, which I think you are wrong. You are right about and he's wrong about. But it's just really weird framing, and it puts him in a strangely vulnerable position. There's a very febrile narrative that he's weaving to make this seem like a good common sense move, right? Because, I mean, everyone's noticing, well, hang on a second. I mean, Jonathan Pye's like, this isn't even Tory light, is it? It's just the Tories with special guest star Nigel Farage. And it's like...
Yes.
Well,
The best example I can think of is when in season 7 of Stargate, Colonel O'Neill retired and they got that new guy in, but otherwise the team was unchanged. It's pretty much that.
Yeah, pretty much that. And the thing is, that's what Calvin Robinson has pointed out. I like Sweller, she's an actual conservative, but it really is just the Conservative Party with extra steps. And so if like people on the left, and are quite entrenched on the left, and people who are definitely on the right, are both saying, well, hang on a second, you're just creating the uniparty consensus in the middle.
Yes.
I think that's the public impression of what's happening. Because it's one thing saying, well, oh, well, I don't take that left-wing guy seriously because he brings a particular ideological agenda. Or I don't take that right-wing guy seriously. He's got a particular ideological agenda. But there's a philosophical theory of truth called convergence theory. And it's like when everyone happens to have converged on the same point,
yes,
there's probably something true about it.
Well, I mean, bear in mind, we live in a society where you couldn't have Calvin Robinson or Jonathan Pye agree on what a woman is.
Correct.
So the fact that we can all agree on this means it is more axiomatically true... than what a woman is.
Completely correct. But moreover, the public is definitely just going to see this, right? It's going to be hard for them to be like, you know, any passing glance, like ex-conservative MP Robert Jenrick or whatever, you're like, oh, right. And another ex-conservative. It's going to build up in your mind, right? Reform are just the reform Tories, right? Okay, fine. So the thing about that is Nigel is actually taking a big gamble with these people as well. So not only is he taking in a bunch of people that he has called failures, we literally just listen to him call them failures.
Yeah,
They are turncoats from their own parties. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be a turncoat from the Tories. Obviously, you shouldn't be in the Tories. But that's never a good look in and of itself. And also, it looks like they're going to lose their seats. So, as we can see, Suella Braverman's seat is hardly a done deal. But then neither is Robert Jemrick's in Newark and Sherwood. He's actually put himself in a minority position here. Now, I don't know how many Conservative or... voters either one's going to bring across, but on paper it might not be that many actually.
So there's a couple of ways of looking at this. The traditional political theory is that a long established MP with good name recognition, that element is worth about 10% of the vote share.
Yeah.
Meaning that if that is correct, what should happen is those two just neatly switch and Reform goes to 53 and Conservatives go to 43 and they win. If the broader political narrative that we often hear, which is a bit lazy but are cited, is that the votes of the Conservatives and Reform are basically interchangeable, if you get to the next election and it looks like the Conservatives genuinely don't have any chance of winning, and that is obviously true, however that hasn't filtered through to Normyland and the Boomers yet, if that filters through, then Jenrick should get 96% of the vote, which I don't believe. But you would expect him
well,
to
about 50% of the vote, actually.
Well, if you add the Reform vote to the... that's chance of winning, isn't it?
Yeah, not...
Oh, no, you're right. 70-odd percent, yeah.
But about 50%. But even then, that's a storming victory. But this is the thing. It's not guaranteed. Because actually, a lot of Conservative voters are quite sticky. People do tend to vote for the rosette rather than the person in it. And this has been a long-standing complaint about British politics. Put a red rosette on a pig and people will vote for it in the North.
Yeah, in the early 2000s, they started putting the political logo on the ballot paper.
Yeah.
Whereas before that, you actually had to learn the name of the candidate you wanted to vote for, which I thought was a minimum hygiene level, but they scrapped that.
Yeah. So obviously it was team voting, but I don't think anything could be taken as read. And so who knows what happens there? But again, this is all a bit an aside on that. So I thought we'd talk about... there was one last thing as well. We're expecting a Labour defection to the Conservative Party, to the Reform Party, but it hasn't materialised yet. I mean, maybe it materialised.
That was like 10 days ago, wasn't it?
Exactly.
That was muted.
Yeah. This was on the same day that Jenrick was announced to have defected, unexpectedly, by Kemi.
Raj really needs that defection.
He really does.
He should be going to whoever it is and saying, look, I'll make you, what do you want? Do you want Home Secretary? Whatever. Just come.
Because at the moment, it is just the Tory narrative. And actually, if Labour can persuade that person to stay off the Reform reservation, it severely weakens Reform.
They're either going to be a hereditary lord or the next Home Secretary, depending on how they negotiate this, yeah.
Anyway, so that's not turned up. So I thought this was an interesting set of polls by YouGov. Voting intention amongst the poorest and richest. Mm. Well, doesn't this tell us everything we need to see? So amongst the poorest, Reform are a third of the vote, and plus 17% have swung to them. And you can see that Labour is down among the poorest, minus 18%. The Greens, it's clear from this that amongst the working class of Britain, the Conservatives and Labour have lost 24 points, and that's gone to Reform and the Greens.
If you are an old-school working man socialist, how the hell do you wrap your head around this? Because the old-school narrative when I was growing up is that the Tories are for the rich and Labour's for the poor.
Correct.
Here, I mean, quite clearly, the rich are voting with their feet. The rich want Labour.
Correct.
Because they're doing very well out of this system. They like the big state. They like the wealth transfers that the big state are making. And the poorest, I mean, it's not only shocking is Reform the highest, is that Conservatives are second.
Yes. Labour have lost more than half their own vote share with the working class.
I mean, they're neck and neck with the Greens.
They were the party of the working class. Like, hereditary.
Yes.
My grandfather and my great-grandfather and my father have all voted Labour, so I've got to vote Labour.
Yes.
Because that's the way that it works.
Well, the clue is in the name. Originally, they were the party of Labour, meaning work.
Correct.
Of course, the people... And actually, there was a really funny little documentary in the Blair era where John Prescott went around the country and spoke to voters to find out where they were. And he was trying to explain the concept of class to this council estate woman. And so they kind of stared at him open-mouthed and said, well, what class are we then? And he said, well, I would say that you're working class. And they all responded, but none of us work. Labour become the party of the richest who are doing well out of the system and people on welfare.
Correct. But also, like, if you think about it, what Tony Blair's great victory was to take the party of the working class and conquer the middle class.
Yes.
Right. The single degree owning affluent suburb dwelling middle class. And that is a that is a cohort, that is a constituency that won't last forever, right? They've got diverging interests. The Labour, educated middle class are interested in virtue signalling and exterminating the working class. They hate the working class because the working class don't have their airy-fairy morals and they don't understand they're meant to be politically correct in order to be a good person. And so the working class to the middle class are cringe. They hate them. They're an embarrassment. They're the football hooligans. They want to see these people essentially educated out of existence. They think, this is what Tony Blair's like, education, education, education. I can make everyone like me. That's what his plan was. I can put everyone in the same class as me. We can get rid of the working class. Now, the working class, as you can see by the very large number of them who are voting Reform and Conservatives, are not going away, actually. They're not necessarily interested in joining the Labour plantation.
Yeah, they're only going away from Labour.
Exactly, they're just going away from Labour. And what's interesting is a much smaller number went to the Greens. So that's the lefty vote, right? Yeah. So the people who have fled the Labour Party at the moment, 18%, I doubt very many Conservatives went to the Greens, right? I imagine that maybe 1% of the Conservatives went to the Greens. But that's the number of lefties who have left the Labour Party. That's the Corbynista vote, right? Who are going to the Greens because your party is just not a thing. But the rest of it is going to be socially conservative, working class Northerners.
This reminds me of that thing on Rotten Tomatoes where they got the critic score and the audience score.
Mm.
And the perfect film is the one that has extremely low critic score and extremely high audience score.
Correct.
Because you know it's not going to be woke and it's actually quite good. This is like a version of that. And Reform do come out very well on this. They are not appealing to the people who are doing well out of this current broken system. They're appealing to the people who are not doing well out of it. And the Conservatives are kind of level. And actually the Greens come out as the worst because they are disproportionately favoured by the sort of smug twats, as it were.
Yes, but notice, again, another thing here. The working class, 52% voting for right-wing parties. The working class, 42% voting for left-wing parties, right? And that's including the 15% who are still in the Labour Party. Now, whether they are actually left-wingers as we understand them in the modern parlance, the working class are much more reactionary. They always have been, and they always will be, I suspect. But then look at the richest. That's a really even breakdown. Right, Reform are nearly 14 points ahead. No, more than 14 points. 16 points ahead of the Conservatives. That's a really clear margin in the working class. Labour are only 4 points ahead of the Lib Dems, who themselves are only 3 points ahead of the Reform Party, who are the lowest in the elites. So the elite idea that is completely shattered. As your point was earlier, it is not the elites who are making the future here. It is actually the working class who are making the realignment happen, and the elites haven't caught up.
But with a shattering like this, you can understand why they think, oh, we just got to piece ourselves back together. The elite coherence just needs to reform, and then we're golden.
Exactly. No. So what Farage should do is just lean into whatever heavily the conservative Labour working class voters around the country are interested in. And that is obviously immigration.
Well, there's another aspect to this as well. These polls, they only show you the people who answered, I'm going to vote for this or that. What they don't show you is all the people who said, I don't care, not interested, stupid question, I don't vote. Because those people did show up and vote for Brexit.
And that's about a third of the country. It's about 30%. Because a good election is about 71% turnout. So 29% didn't turn out. A bad one can be literally 59%, something like that.
Yep.
Where you've got nearly 40% of the country.
That is a huge chunk of voters who are just waiting for something credible to turn up.
Exactly. And so the point being, ignore the elites, right? You don't need to take in all of these other elites. That's not what people are voting on. As you pointed out, they're not voting on elite credibility. Otherwise, they wouldn't be voting for Farage, right? He wouldn't be a credible, tenured politician, and yet still, working class people are like, nearly twice as much as the next competitor.
I suspect that his vanity has led him to believe that he has joined the elites and that's why he's now credible.
Correct. And the elite opinion, actually, I think, is going to end up following this. I mean, 16%, that's a plus six swing between December and January for the richest in the country to reform. Like, elite opinion will follow what happens because what's happening is that the working class people are most closely affected by the problems. The elites are affected far further down the line, but I'm sure they're feeling the pinch of the higher electricity bills, the high petrol prices, the high grocery prices, the high house prices. They're so, okay, yeah, we're doing well. Oh my God, that is a, you know.
Well, certainly the ones who've got their own business as opposed to being a quango boss on 300 grand a year.
Exactly. If you're not just being paid by the government, which, you know, only 18% of the people are on government wages, then you even if you're doing very well, you must be looking and going, okay, this is starting to pinch. Right, maybe that Nigel Farage fellow has a point. So anyway, that's the voting by income. And then you've got voting by education. And this, again, not terribly surprising. People of a low education level and who'd got GCSEs, 42% for Nigel Farage. Why? Because they're not trying to bring about some stupid, abstract, liberal utopia. What they're saying is, I want my country back. Right? And that's been Farage's messaging. And it's resonated. And again, look at Labour. Look at Labour with the working man who didn't go to university, right? 12%!
Well, so, they haven't been indoctrinated enough.
Exactly. But also, they don't represent those people anymore. They used to be the party of the working man, so you always used to have regional accents on Labour leaders. But now you have this, you know, very indistinguishable, like, mono accent.
I mean, Michael Foot must be turning in his grave numbers like this.
All of them. I mean, God, can you even imagine? But even then, they've lost a lot of elite credibility, because what do the Greens do? They're going to one-up you. You said we're for insane lefty liberalism.
Yeah, the Greens are only slightly off Labour.
Because the Greens are the student politician vote. And Labour are a bunch of student politicians. They've been...
Yeah, they all are, yeah.
They've been playing on this for a long time. And the Greens are like, yeah, but you're still conceding something to reality. We want the fiction. We want John Lennon's Imagine. And Labour's like, okay, but we are a party of government at the moment, and we've got to be honest with you, we have to do this, this, and this. And the Greens are like, well, I don't want that. You know, and then you've got the stupid student lefties who are like, yeah, no, I agree with that. And,
well, you do see a bit of that. So Andy Burnham came out the other day and he's... And,
we'll get
oh, no, no, it's a se- no, it's a separate point. Oh,
okay, go on.
He came out and he said, I don't know why we're listening to markets. You know, why are we having to listen to these bond people all the time? Well, the answer is because they're financing your government. But he dipped into the whole, let's just go with fantasy land. Yes. But he got reined in when somebody pointed out, no, you literally cannot pay pensions if you ignore the bond market. So he had to walk it back. The difference with the Greens is that they can say something ridiculous and then continue to inhabit that space, because nobody's going to come along and say, no, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Well, the reason I think this is an interesting way of looking at this as well is that there are lots of people who don't have higher education who earn lots of money.
Mm.
Plumbers, builders, small businessmen, who literally just enterprising young men in council estates who are like, no, I'm going to get an apprenticeship, get my job as a plumber, set up a little LLC, you know, limited liability company, and I'm just going to earn 100k a year fixing stuff, right?
Yep.
Okay, you've got low education level, officially by their numbers, but look how conservative they are. 63%.
Yes.
Right, 63%.
Not even close, is it?
It's just like The fact that Conservatives got nearly twice as much with Labour is because, no, look, I don't care about your stupid, abstract, liberal rationalisations about human rights and ECHR. I want my country to be for me and my children, and I want it to be good. Right?
Greens are just nowhere on this.
Nowhere. Right? It's only in the very high-educated, abstract...
It just goes to show that everything they believe is a luxury belief, and I presume that 9% has to be the Muslim vote element of their coalition.
I imagine it is. I imagine, in fact, I hadn't even thought about that, but that's probably true. And then you've got men and women, and this is another very interesting thing. Now, among men, not surprising that men are overwhelmingly reform, right? Men have just gone, not interested in the Labour Party. But interesting, they've lost Conservatives as well. And the Greens have got, you know, this 13% soy boys. But look at women. Reform are the most popular among women. And then it's the Conservatives.
I take some comfort in this than that if you watch a lot of American politics, you'd expect that gap to be bigger.
Yes.
At least there is a difference, but at least it's not wild. So well done, British women, for being less insane than your American counterparts.
Correct. Still, you know, 40%, 43% of women are right wing by this metric, right?
Yeah.
And even then, the sort of like the liberal Liberal Democrats are kind of their own thing, because the Liberal Democrats are actually in a position where they can be left-wing on any issue they want, but they can also be like classically liberal Thatcherites whenever it suits them, right? So I tend to try and discount the Lib Dems, because honestly, I don't really think they really believe anything. I think it's a social club, right? I think it's a, you know, we're the southwest of England and that's how we identify. So the fact that the actual, like, libtardism of the Greens and Labour Party is actually outshined by Reform and Conservatives among women, and let alone among men, obviously, but that's what is Labour doing, right? They've just lost everyone. Just absolutely everyone. So the coalition Tony Blair built has not survived, right? And so let's have a look at this, right? So Stats for Lefties are like, well, the Labour Party have only gone 3.5 out of the 17.4 of this one YouGov poll. Have only gone 3.5 to Reform and 6.2 to Greens. So contrary to popular belief, Labour is not struggling in the polls because they're losing votes to Reform. Even if they've recovered all the votes lost to Reform, they'd still be on 21%, down double digits. Instead, they've lost the bulk of the votes to the left. It's like, that feels like cope to me, because the left end in the bloody top of the polls. Like, sorry, I just don't really agree. Actually, considering what we've seen, I don't think that's true, right? I don't think working class people are going left. Now, this is the election map from 2024.
I mean, to be fair, the narrow claim there is the subset of working class people who vote Labour by the last election. Some of them have peeled off. I mean, but yeah, it's a weak claim.
Sure, but he's saying the majority of them have gone to the left, and it's like, no, I don't think that's true, because I mean, look at all this area, right? This the north of England. That is almost rock solid Labour, right? And as well,
they called it the Red Wall for a reason.
They call it the Red Wall for a reason, right? And again, parts of Scotland there, all solidly Labour, right? Now, this is just a moderately decent Reform poll, like 31%.
Yep.
That's not terribly great. But what happened? They didn't go to the Greens. They didn't go to the Lib Dems. No, they went to Reform, right? The working class have gone to Reform. So Nigel Farage's core vote that has pushed him over the edge, that's beyond his personal magnetism. Farage has probably got about 10-15% of just, I'm Nigel Farage and I'm popular. But the rest of it is built up of disenfranchised working class voters who otherwise historically would have voted for the Labour Party, going straight over to Reform and saying, no, this is the patriotic party and I'm a patriot.
I mean, the difference between the first map and the second map is the second map, that one looks like a rash where the cream has really started to work, and there's just one or two blotches left, but you know it's going to be gone by the time you need to go to the beach or put in your bikini, whatever it is.
Correct, right? And so even in Manchester, right? Manchester, Labour stronghold for God knows how long, right? But no, Manchester's going Reform. I think he's got a map.
Manchester is going Reform.
Yeah, I think so. I thought he's got a map somewhere, but obviously I haven't got it. But here's a Find Out Now poll. But voting intention in Manchester, it's like, sorry, a lot of that 36% would have been Labour, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, a lot of the Greens, 18%, would have been Labour as well. But sorry, I really have to say, even if the YouGov stats are saying that, I don't think they're capturing what's actually happening.
Even if you add all of the Greens onto the Labour position, it doesn't get you to what Labour have historically done in Manchester. That was their city.
Yeah. You couldn't take it off. I mean, literally, it was an industrial heartland.
Mm.
The Labour Party was founded in this country to represent industrial workers, which is why it's always been a basically pseudo-socialist commie party, right?
Yep.
You know, they think of them as being the proletariat, and that was what they're for. Well, Nigel Farage now has those voters. And so what do they do, right? So anyway, what we can see from all of this is complete desperation from the Labour Party, right? Labour are on borrowed time. Everyone hates them. Here's just the latest approval rating for the government at the moment. 68% disapprove, 13% approve, 18% no opinion either way, right? I mean, when the last time we checked, I think it was about 15% approve, so that's gone down. It's just never...
And as I remember from two episodes ago, I think you said that 18% of the British population work for the state.
Correct.
So only about two-thirds of them agree that Labour are doing a good job.
Maybe three-quarters, should we say, but he's losing the NHS workers as well.
Yeah.
Right? And we see the further collapse everywhere, right? Here's Scotland. Again, Labour, if you look back previously, where was that map? Labour does great in Scotland, right? But no, not anymore. Labour, it's between the SNP and Reform now in this in Fife, where Labour's their votes collapsed and the Conservative vote has also collapsed. Now, the Conservatives never did great in Scotland, but Reform just storming in there with over a quarter of the vote, putting them as the second party there. It's like, right, so our theory that it is the realignment is being done by the voting public is correct, I think. And this is them in Wales. 10% in Wales. 10%. Again, it's down to the quote-unquote Nationalist Party and Reform. So,
yeah,
and people don't understand what Plaid Cymru actually stands for, as we've seen in previous episodes. But 10%, like, that is brutal. Well,
and this was one of Tony Blair's bright ideas, was devolution to the regions, to Scotland and Wales. I mean, that is, I mean, he got him short-term popularity, but he kicked the can down the road over the cliff for the future Labour leaders.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The Labour is a dead party. I mean, they get nothing. You know, like, how many, like, I have 96 seats. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seats. Doesn't even register. It's going to be,
well,
like...
That's only with the PR element that kicks in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, good point. But it's going to be like, you know, in Cardiff, there'll be a couple of tiny, like, constituencies that don't show up on the map.
Yeah.
But the point being, they're done. Same with the Conservatives. They're done.
Mm.
The Conservatives used to have quite a good showing in Wales as well. So it's like, no, you're done. It is over. The new paradigm is here, and you need to understand it. So let's talk about Andy Burnham, because he is essentially Labour's last gasp at what the, basically political relevance. Now, a lot of people don't know who Andy Burnham is, but 71% of people who know who he is at least something. I mean, I guess that makes him a national politician, right?
I mean, compared to who? I mean, I mean,
Wes Streeting.
Yeah, he's a lot more well known than him,
right? And Andy Burnham is also. I mean, he's not unpopular, which is a good start for a British politician. As you can see, he's got a 27% approval rating, and what was that? I would say 23% dislike. So he's on, you know, single figures in positive. Now, that's really unusual for a British politician. Most British politicians are just entirely negative. Entirely negative.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a bit of a special situation where I don't dislike him because he's in Manchester and he's nowhere near me, and therefore I have no particular reason to dislike him.
Because he's mayor of Manchester, right?
Yes,
yeah.
I just don't, yeah, whatever.
Now, just to be clear, he seems to be quite a popular mayor of Manchester, right? Mm. As far as I can tell, I'm not an expert on his political career, but I had a look into it. He's done a bunch of things that people in Manchester are happy with. And he seems to be taking his job very seriously.
I honestly don't follow Manchester politics, but I get the impression you're right.
Why would you? But that's the point. And so, when a Manchester by-election came up, because Andrew Gwynn here, from Gorton and Denton, was suspended from Labour for based messages.
Oh, really?
Not even joking. Based messages.
You know what he actually said?
Something. Well, they didn't. They don't give us the exact.
Is it remigration now? They've all got to go. What was it?
Where was it? They do say. They thought an Anglican priest should be burned on the bonfire for being woke. There was few other things as well, but they're just him being racist and sexist, basically.
Right.
And so it was
should have made him leader.
Well, yeah, exactly. He probably would have done quite well, but instead he stepped down, right? And so that meant. Oh, right, there's a seat open. Now, what's that doing? Oh, yeah, right, okay. We'll get to that. That meant there is a seat open. Now, Andy Burnham, you will remember, if I can... Where is it? Screw it. Spoiling a bunch of stuff now. Andy Burnham has been floated as the one name that can save Labour. Because he's not underwater in the polls. He's been talked about. In fact, I watched a bunch of these sort of Westminster podcasts about this, and they talk about him like he's some political prodigy or something, right? And it's like, no, he seems nice, you know, he seems like a fairly all right guy, but he's, you know, like with the incident with the bond markets and stuff, I don't think he's actually the sharpest political actor. I think he's just a kind
of wouldn't be in Labour if he was, but yeah,
I think he's, well, I mean, yeah, he's not Tony Blair, right? I think he's just a kind of well-meaning guy who's done quite a good job in Manchester. And he sees that the Labour Party is heading towards a cliff. All these signs of a historic wipeout, so the Labour Party will never be a party of government again. He's like, okay, I have to step in to save this. And how can he get there? Well, as the Mayor of Manchester, he can't become the party leader. He's got to become an MP. So this seat in Gorton and Denton turning up, oh, couldn't have been better timed.
Well, apart from I believe in the Labour Party, as I think it says here, it's the National Executive that
have
to approve the list.
And so the question is, who controls the National Executive? And the answer to that is Keir Starmer.
Yes.
and Morgan McSweeney.
Yes.
And so as Politics UK here, they're like, look, there is a path for Andy Burnham to stand as an MP. And look how convoluted this is, right? You would need approval from Labour's NEC, which is widely seen as supportive of Keir Starmer, completely his instrument, by the way. The NEC could block him outright by imposing an all-women shortlist to the seat because most Labour MPs are men, so great. Labour MPs supportive of Burnham could challenge this and try and overturn that move. If approved and selected as the candidate, he'd have to step down as Greater Manchester Mayor, which would trigger a mayoral by-election, and he would still have to win the by-election at a time where there is no such thing as a safe Labour seat.
I mean, he might be able to do it, but risky.
Very risky.
Yes.
Right.
And this kind of all goes back to the original point that I started with, is they all assume that legitimacy flows from elites, and therefore you just need to change leaders around.
Yes.
And you can see the Tories, they're about to do this, and actually Labour will probably do it in the next 18 months. They think, okay, all our legitimacy is used up, we swap out the leader and we get a bump. And actually, I know, I don't think that works.
It has
no impact.
I think that time has passed. Angela Rayner has defied Keir Starmer by backing Burnham, but it's not going to matter. Everyone's going for it, by the way.
George Galloway.
Yeah.
Oh, Zach Polanski as well.
Well, this was rumoured, right?
So,
right. So now that would have been a hell of a fight, right? But actually that didn't happen. So right. Zach Polanski, they are going to heavily contest it, but they're not. It's not going to be Zach Polanski because although we'll get to the polling in a minute, it's going to be competitive.
Right, okay.
I
don't actually know who's going to contest this.
Right. Well, Zach Polanski himself is not going to do it. They're going to get... it's very likely to be a lady called Hannah Spencer, who's the leader of the Green Group on Trafford Council, who stood against Burnham in the 2024 mayoral election. If we go back, because I misaligned it, it's going to be Matt Goodwin for Reform. Which is very interesting. What's interesting about that is who it's not.
Zaha Yusuf?
Yes.
Right.
Who is the most powerful person in Reform who is not an MP?
Yes.
And who is doing the best in Manchester in the polls at the moment?
Reform.
So why isn't it Zaha Yusuf?
Well, an answer does spring to mind, but I seem to think that Manchester has quite a strong Muslim population, unless they feel that that is a factor that the... still very slight majority. Actually, I don't know this particular seat.
Well, let me quit. I didn't check, actually. Let me check.
But it really depends on which constituency in Manchester, because some of them are overwhelmingly Muslim, yes. And some of them actually still have a white working class population. So that is the only swing factor that I can think of, because on rhetoric, having heard both of them, they're actually pretty aligned when it comes to the strength of the rhetoric they put out.
Very similar. Very similar. I mean, like Zaha Yusuf, honestly, he's not been terrible. I've got to hand it to him on this. And
this just plays to the point about sectarian politics in Britain, because if this had come up 10 years ago, I wouldn't have bothered raising the ethnicity of the candidate, because
it wouldn't matter.
I mean, it wasn't really a factor, but today it absolutely is a factor.
Yes. I suspect that this is an area that has more white British people.
Well, the fact that they'd chosen Matt Goodwin would tend to suggest...
And the fact that they previously had a straight white man as their MP. Right, so that's interesting. So it wasn't Mothin Ali or anything like that who was going for the Greens. It's just going to be some rando. The Labour leadership... the Labour Party membership wants Burnham. Right?
Mm.
They like Burnham. Burnham is the most popular politician in the Labour Party among Labour members. He's also one of the few Labour politicians who has one of the few politicians in the country who has a positive overall net rating, and he has been positive in his role as the Manchester mayor. So if anyone had the name recognition, the clout to actually swing a Manchester constituency, it's got to be Burnham.
Yes. Which would immediately put him as a threat to Keir Starmer. So what is the game that Andy Burnham is playing here? Because he would have known the Labour Party rules, and he would have known that Morgan McSweeney can block him. So unless he's just doing this to embarrass the proceduralism of Morgan McSweeney and Keir Starmer, I don't quite get what his extra angle is here.
No idea, but he wrote to the NEC asking for permission to enter, and they were like, well, we might need a BAME shortlist. Might need an all-women shortlist.
Well, isn't that convenient?
It's one of those things. We've got more white men than BAME. We've got more men than women. I don't know what to tell you.
We've got this enormous list of rules over here that when it suits us, we can go and pick that one. And it just so happens to align with whatever the leadership happens to want.
Yeah, and so they blocked him. Obviously, this came directly from Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer explained himself, saying, "Oh, we can't afford a Manchester mayoral by-election at the moment.
No,
there's no need for this. This is and it's like, no, Keir. Everyone can tell.
I mean, they need to rename the constituency the Donbass, and then they can get four billion. But yeah."
Keir Starmer was alleging that they'd have to pay for the mayoral election out of Manchester's city funds or something. And it's like, right, okay. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure that the Labour Party isn't doing great for money, actually.
The entire country's broke. But the point is, they're still spunking money off left, right and centre all over the place whenever it damn well suits them. So obviously, this paper-thin excuse is not going to hold. I don't know how it's going to hold with Labour backbenchers.
Correct. But the thing is, this comes after a long, long saga of Andy Burnham getting cucked by Keir Starmer, right?
Right.
So remember that Keir Starmer is like Stalin, right? Remember when he took over the Labour Party and he just started kicking people out, right? Just started throwing them out. Jeremy Corbyn, I mean, nearly threw out Diane Abbott, right?
To be fair.
There was something like 200, 300,000 Corbynites who just left the party because Keir Starmer said, no, we're not having you. Well, I think it's 200,000, not 300,000. But they're literally loads of them. Kicks Corbyn out. Is like, right, no, end of it. And this was at the Labour conference speech back in September where Burnham just got completely cucked by Keir Starmer because Keir Starmer is someone who will brutally wield executive power if he thinks he wants, if he needs it, right?
Oh, we live in Britain, I'm well aware.
Yeah, exactly. So Andy Burnham, this is the second time that he's been cucked by Starmer, despite the fact this is a road to hell for Starmer, right, for the Labour Party. Mm. Right, Andy Burnham actually is their last chance. I mean, let's just pull names out of a hat. You know,
Ed Miliband and Angela Rayner?
Wed Streeting? You know, Shibana, well, look, Streeting's probably angling for it. But the point is, they don't have anyone else. And Starmer has just used the BAME shortlist to block Andy and say, nope, sorry, mate. Can't do it.
It's not remotely credible.
No, it's not. And it's clearly Starmer protecting himself because after the May elections, it's going to be very clear that a backbench revolt is already fomenting, right?
Mm.
Over David Lammy abolishing jury trials. Mm. That's already bad for them.
I'm going to give the Labour backbenchers a hell of a lot of credit if they revolt over that.
I mean, they should do, but they haven't yet, right? But anyway, so this is the favourability of Andy Burnham in Manchester, and most voters have a really favourable view of
it. You're not going to get better than that.
No.
I mean, clearly this is not about keeping the seat.
It's about keeping a challenger outside of Keir Starmer's orbit. Because the only way that Burnham can challenge Starmer is by being an MP. And Starmer has just shut him down. No, you're not going to be an MP in what is essentially a really likely competition for you. Mm. And so Labour are basically just going to sacrifice the seat. Now, of course, people don't think this was right. People can see this entirely self-interest on the part of Starmer.
So what's the question, Gabriel?
Is Starmer correct to block Burnham from running?
Oh, right. The only one that really counts for is Labour. Sure. And, yeah.
Burnham is way more popular in Labour than Starmer is.
Yes.
And the thing to remember is there are no safe Labour seats. So here is the current projection. This was on a knife edge. You can see why the Greens are going to be contesting it heavily.
Yeah.
And people like...
Okay. Oh, I mean, it's a three-way horse race from this. Absolutely. So Labour 29, Form 26, 37, Greens 24. I mean, that year.
I mean, you can see how the Conservatives are splitting the vote here.
Yep.
You know, good thing the Greens and Labour are going to be contesting for the same constituency, but it's going to be the Conservatives who end up scuppering it and might end up giving it to the Labour Party. So Keir Starmer might luck into keeping this constituency. But it's just very interesting how it's genuinely like marginal as hell. And you get all sorts of predictions. So...
To be fair, Keir Starmer doesn't need this seat because his majority is big enough.
That is true.
The only thing he needs, and he's not going to be re-elected at the next general election, the only thing he needs to do is hold on to his job until the next election. That is the successful criteria for Keir Starmer.
Correct. And so you can see from Keir Starmer's position, he's like, well, if I let an obvious challenger come into Parliament and then start a backbench revolt against me and enough letters of no confidence go in, and we have to have a leadership challenge, which he will clearly win, or I could just Stalin this and just make an executive decision now, and Burnham goes to the gulag and his political career is over. Right? That's what's happened here. And so, but again, it's marginal. Everything's played for. And 50 MPs are sort of joining the backbench rumblings of, well, hang on a second. This was our guy, because we're actually not thinking about Keir Starmer's political career. We're thinking about the future of the Labour Party. Mm. You know, sorry, we're not happy about this. And add those to the MPs who are like, you can't just abolish jury trials. And you realise that the sand is shifting under Keir Starmer's feet. So after May the 7th, basically Keir Starmer is going to get waxed. Right? Labour Party are going to get waxed. And everyone will be like, this is your fault, Keir Starmer. And he will literally have no one else to blame.
I mean, he is absolutely in least disastrous option choosing only.
Yeah. And,
but every option is disastrous.
Exactly. I hate to say the walls are closing in.
Yes.
But they literally are closing in. And it all goes back to your point at the very beginning, that it's because the electorate has decided they want out. They want out of the current elite-guided system and are just reassigning themselves. And so this is why, just to finish off, this is why it's so weird watching Farage kind of fumbling this, right? So what Farage is doing is assembling an elite of Conservative Party and telling the Labour voters who have joined him to vote for them, creating a kind of Frankenstein's monster party, right? It's like, look, these are things that are inorganically stitched together.
Very good analogy.
That are not natural bedfellows, and rather than taking them seriously, you seem to be taking the previous paradigm seriously that is in the middle of collapsing. These people, almost all of them, are, if not definitely going to go, very clearly think, oh shit, I can't be safe here. I'm not sure that I'm getting this constituency in the next one.
Right? Yeah, and it goes back to my point about the three excluded groups, the first one being the excluded talent. Obviously, you could have kept Rupert Lowe.
Yes.
And then he would have been, how many other Rupert Lowes are there out there?
I mean, Rupert Lowe can poll 10% organically on his own.
Well, but my point is that I don't think that Rupert Lowe is unique. The only thing that's particularly unique about Rupert Lowe is that he made it into the system. But there will be dozens, if not hundreds, of other people like Rupert. What you're looking for is people who have delivered something serious in the real world and achieved results, right? And there will be loads of them. Well, I say loads. There'll be hundreds to dozens. He should have been going out and finding them and lining them up and then saying, look, this guy used to run whatever store that you've heard of, pub chain you've heard of.
Weatherspoons.
Yeah, something like that.
Why haven't you got Tim What's-His-Face?
Yeah, Tim What's-His-Face, get him in, give him a department, give him transport or something. He knows how to get a large group of individuals with different stakeholders to do things that results in an actual result.
I can't remember
result.
His surname. Sorry, carry on.
No, I can't remember. But the point is, there's going to be loads of those guys
Tim
out.
Tim Martin.
Nigel could have been going around hoovering them all up, building a shadow cabinet outside of Parliament. But what he wants is people who know that when they try and do anything, the permanent secretary in the civil service comes along and says, yes, Minister, if you try and do that, you're going to end up with personal legal repercussions for doing that, and therefore you can't do it. Yep. People who have already been placed in that situation and failed it by saying, oh, okay, I'll back off then.
Yep. And yet, here we are. So anyway, like, completely correct. But the broader point is that there's something, like you were saying, like he's stamping on a glass ceiling, right? And it's like it's breaking the system. That's true, but he's actually not reaping the rewards of this as he should be, right? Yeah. Farage should be on about 40% easily as the outsider candidate who is sick of the system and is here to smash it.
Yes.
And the working class, the people who are not university educated, 42% reform, they're all for it, right? Yep. But even a surprising number of educated people, 16%, yep, are for it too, right? if you can't make a successful governing coalition constituency out of that, that's crazy. Why are you in your, like,
he doesn't know what time it is. He's not looking at this as we are from first principles. He's looking at it, like I said, pre-Brexit political chess. He just thinks they need to move that. Whatever pieces on board in front of him are the only ones he can see. He doesn't realise all he needs to do is stand up and look around. Yeah. And when you look at it from first principles, there is a coalition and a significant one of talent ready to go, but he can't see it because he's in the SW1 bubble now.
And you, but again, we'll end on what I think was the best point you made at the beginning. Legitimacy is not flowing from authority.
No, it's preceding it.
Exactly. The authority has demonstrably failed. It has been the source of the problems. It currently remains the source of the problems. And so people are looking for legitimacy outside of the system, and Farage used to embody that. And so actually I think it's a political weakening of himself to just bring in the ex-Tories and say, right, Labour voters, vote for these guys.
Mm. It's a mistake.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This Valentine's Day, create a space that feels warm and welcoming with help from Menards. Whether it's a small refresh or a big project, Menards has the tools and materials you need. Build something together and make your home a place you both love coming back to. Don't forget the sweets for your sweetheart. Get a 6-ounce bag of Russell Stover chocolate candies for $3.99 now through February 14th. Save big money and finish your projects together at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.